to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. In Copper Yearning, a book of poetry by Kimberly Blazer, words serve as a bridge from the heart to what is sacred, including the land and the waterways. This White Earth Ojibwe poet is helping us celebrate National Poetry Month by asking us to take a deeper view into our place in the world as Native people. She also gives the details of life center stage in her poems. Stay tuned as we get ready to visit with our April Book of the Month poet, Kimberly Blazer.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The full U.S. Senate is set to consider a major bipartisan water bill that would update water infrastructure across the U.S. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports the package includes funding for tribal drinking water projects.
The $35 billion Drinking Water and Wastewater Infrastructure Act is the first legislation to advance out of Senate committee related to the Biden-Harris administration's sweeping infrastructure proposal. It would invest in alternate water sources like desalination and storm and wastewater reuse across the country, along with updating aging water infrastructure. But one key component of the bill is the reauthorization of the Indian Reservation Drinking Water Program. Democratic Arizona Senator Mark Kelly is a co-sponsor of the bill.
Too many tribal communities lack access to running water and don't have wastewater infrastructure. And the drought conditions has made this worse. This $50 million annually is going to help tribes complete these water projects every year.
Kelly says in Arizona alone, the program would fund 10 tribal drinking water projects each year. It's estimated about a third of residents on the Navajo Nation lack water in their homes, which has myriad negative impacts on local economies and public health. The Infrastructure Act also includes funding to prevent water waste, as well as technologies to shield water systems from cyber threats, climate change, drought, and wildfire. I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
While the rest of the U.S. is finding its stride in vaccination efforts, tribal communities have been running a mean streak for months. KLCC's Brian Bull has more.
When Donna Woods of Kaiser died before Thanksgiving last year, it was from a brain aneurysm, not COVID-19. The pandemic cast its omnipresent shadow over the funeral all the same. Woods' surviving sister, Dee Pigsley.
The Catholic Church in Kaiser at that time was 50 people inside the church, 50 in a different part of the church. And our family, when we have a service, it's usually around a couple hundred people.
As chairwoman for the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians, Pigsley's seen the pandemic shutter everything but the tribal health clinic in the past year. This has affected her people's ability to gather, whether for powwows or funerals.
We have to tell people they can't come because that's the way it is.
But Pigsley is pleased that her tribe is pushing back against the pandemic through vaccinations. As of early March, the CTSI had inoculated one-fourth of enrolled members. The Chinook Wind Casino has reopened, firing up one of the tribe's biggest economic engines.
Tribes deserve a lot of credit.
Brian Mercier is the Northwest Regional Director for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. He says a network of Indian health service clinics and tight community bonds have boosted vaccination efforts on reservations. He recalls a stark contrast from earlier this year.
The Confederate Tribes of Unitilla in Mission, Oregon, had done something like 700 shots in arms when their neighboring county had only done less than 10 at that time.
And a partnership between the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, One Community Health, and The Next Door has enabled a mobile vaccination van to reach tribal people in the Columbia River Basin.
It's a lot of effort if you're 200 or 300 miles away from your reservation.
The commission's Jeremy Fivecrow says an aggressive sign-up effort got folks scheduled for 100 doses at Celilo Falls on the first day. He says Native people are determined to protect their families, elders, and culture. I'm Brian Bull.
A Navajo student is a virtual guest to attend President Biden's address to Congress Wednesday night. Helene Archuleta was invited by U.S. New Mexico Senator Ben Ray Lujan. The high school student is distance learning, Lujan seeking to improve broadband for students like Archuleta. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Next. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus. Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwitui. Words are powerful, and they gain even more strength when they are charged with emotion and truth. Today we get to lean into the words of Anishinaabe poet Kimberly Blazer in her book of poetry, Copper Yearnings. Her work takes us to the water's edge as well as in the middle of different bodies of water. They also ask us to recount history through a Native lens, and they give us space to think about our interactions with space and time as Native people. Those are just a few invitations the creativity of Kimberly Blazer is sending out to the world. We hope you'll accept them and join us today for our April Book of the Month and our celebration of National Poetry Month. And when you do call in today, and are one of the first 10 callers to make it on air with your comment or question, you'll receive a complimentary copy of Copper Yearnings, courtesy of Holy Cow Press. Phone lines are open now at 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also 1-800-996-2848. And joining us today from Lyons Township, Wisconsin, is Kimberly Blazer. She is a poet and a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and is a MFA faculty for the Institute of American Indian Arts, and she served as the Wisconsin Poet Laureate 2015 to 2016. And in 2020, Kimberly also founded the literary organization INNAPO, which is Indigenous Nations Poets. And she is Anishinaabe from the White Earth Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Kimberly. And I know you go by Kim, so Kim, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's just great to be here with you.
And especially as this month, you know, is getting close to wrapping up, there has definitely been a lot of awareness to poetry and what it brings to our lives. And, you know, there are even our favorite poets who are stepping out and sharing some of their work. And so definitely a celebrated month. And Kimberly, featuring your poetry in it is, you know, it's an honor for us. And I just would like you to just hop into the center of your poetic world. And what is it that poetry gives to you or teaches you or maybe even challenges you? Tell me a little bit about that side of things.
Sure. Well, poetry for me, I always say, is an act of attention. It's a way of paying attention to the world, but also inviting the reader listener to also see the world in a new way. So we, you know, see and re-see, because when you look closely at something, you give it your attention, then you're going to discover something else. And so it's an engagement with the world around us. So I say active attention. I say it's a gesture, because it's not only the language on the page, it wants to encompass something larger. And sometimes for me, that might mean the history of Native people in this country, or it might be spiritual realities. But oftentimes poetry also, I believe, for Native people is an act of resistance.
And so when we allow it to be what it needs to be, what do you think is one of the biggest rewards?
So it's transformational in the sense that I've been working on a series of poems now called The Way We Love Something Small, and it's about, just as it suggests, small things that you look at closely or something. There are these moments as we go through our life that something just captures our attention. It shimmers. It sort of means something different. It just takes us out of regular time and space, right? And so if we allow that to happen, it can actually change us. You know, it can change our perspective. It can change our interior. You know, so if we think, for example, of poetry in some instances in traditional cultures were song poems, right? They were prayers. And so that is, of course, a power source that can impact us in who we are, how we engage in the world. And just, you know, poetry can be used for healing. It can be used to entertain, all sorts of different ways that we engage with language. But I think that it's not static. It's not something that's set on the page and stays there. It's something that we activate with our voice and we enter into poems. And in that way, they can transform us.
And I'd like your take on all this, too. Go ahead and give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. It is our April Book of the Month, and we are visiting with Kim Blazer. She's on the line with us. If you'd like to talk to her directly, dial now, 1-800-996-2848. And so, Copper Yearning, tell me a little bit more about what we find in the pages of this book.
So this collection is long. It contains poems gathered over a fairly long stretch of time. Sometimes when I'm, you know, in the world, and particularly in the moment that I was Wisconsin Poet Laureate, I was swallowed by the process of writing, performing, teaching, collaborating. And so the process sometimes takes precedent over publication. So I found myself with a lot of poems. And I realized as I was putting the book together that I'm often circling in writing or being preoccupied with the same topics. So I thought that I would trace kind of the trajectory. And it, you know, the book opens with origin, especially around water. But my own idea of belonging to a place, a time, a community, or what I sometimes call a cosmology of Nebu, which is a cosmology of water. So there is a way in which our ideas and worlds come from embeddedness in place. So the first section of the book is also called Geographies of Longing, because we're always on the journey to discover and claim our own belonging, our relatedness, our identity, as it's informed by our grounding in geographies. And then I also think that longing is eternal. Like, we're always searching. We're always journeying. So the second section tries to name part of that search as hunger for balance. And the next one is frayed histories, and it looks straight at the fact of settler colonialism, at removals and genocides, and also often looks at it in an intimate way that's grounded in my family or my tribe. And then the next movement in the book is called Alchemy Inherited, and it's filled with poems of remembrance, entangled with also like todayness. So Polygon Allen once talked about remembering, that idea of putting back together the bodies of the past. And so I think that's how I use memory in that section. And then the next section is Black Ash and Resistance. And that's filled with poems of contemporary resistance, or what Gerald Visner might call survival plus resistance. Ecological disaster, Standing Rock, threats to effigy mounds, those and other sort of justice issues are in that section. And then some of the poems also came from a visit I made to the Kingdom of Bahrain. So impression in all of its forms, but also solidarity. So poetry as a kind of solidarity, poetry as work in the world. And then finally, I turn to Refractions of Spirit. That idea that we both seek and grow in our, you know, connection with the world and the language and all of those things around us, And it also deals with, so spirituality is a reality of voice resistance community, but also loss. And finally, the last little poem in the book is called An Envoy, which brings everything together, all those strands. So it's really kind of a methodical, how do I trace that journey that I've been on, which I think is parallel to the journey.
And you really cover a lot of ground, a lot of emotion. And, you know, I think when we turn to poetry to do this kind of thing, we get like in a rocket, and you're able to get to some of these spaces faster than you could in other forms. And so, you know, we are going to hear directly from Kim in some of her work out of her book, Copper Yearning. And if you'd like to join us, dial now 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call. We have Blue in Norman, Oklahoma, tuned in online. Thanks for calling, Blue. You're on air.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Blazer. It's probably the Blue that you're thinking of. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more. You addressed this a little bit with your comments on visitor and survivance, but the role that you see of Native literature and its often engagements with place in our social activist kind of history. You talked about Standing Rock, but also if we think moving forward with Black Lives Matter and other social activist movements, what do you see as the place of literature that deals with place?
Hey there, Blue. Thanks for asking. And Kimberly, go ahead. We got about a minute before break.
Okay. So in a minute, I think of poetry as affective, beautiful as language, but effective, doing something in the world. So it never wants to only be literature. It wants to engage with or invite action. And so I sometimes, you know, what I do, the way that I try to do that in my poetry is actually to make a space for the person, the reader or the listener, and sometimes literally in performance to give them lines to say so that it becomes an act and not something that's passive. And so I think that's part of how we can make literature engage with our world, that we take up the subjects that we're preoccupied with around justice issues, and then we actually make it a community activity as opposed to a solitary, I'm in my room writing this and have nothing to do with you activity, right? So that's one of the things. And also, you know, just as, you know, if you're thinking about Visner and survivance, is that sense of we are still here, we're still alive, moving forward, and resistance. So
yes,
things at the same time.
A lot of things there. Hang tight, Kim. We got to go to break. We'll be right back. Phone lines are open. A familiar character returns in The New Adventures of Super Indian. It's a new radio theater podcast by Arrogant Stars Resium Studios and Native Voices at the Autry. It reintroduces us to the main character and his friends who first appeared on radio years ago. We'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Thanks for joining us for our April Book of the Month. I'm Tara Gatewood from Masleto Pueblo. And here on our Native Airwaves is Kimberly Blazer. We have our focus on her book, Copper Yearning. And it is a book of poetry, and it's full of a lot of great reflections on Native life. And we hope you'll hop into this discussion and share your love of poetry by dialing in. Our phone lines are open at 1-800-996-2848. And we're also giving away copies of her book. We just gave one away, and we'll give away more in this hour, but you got to dial in 1-800-996-2848, and you got to get on air. And Kimberly, I definitely want to give you a moment if there's anything else you'd like to add to the that place you took us and thinking about, you know, the purpose and the use of poetry and movement and resistance. Anything else?
Sure. One of the things that Blue also mentioned was about specific places. And I was thinking to link that to the question you asked about, you know, what is it that poetry is up to in some ways? And part of what poetry can do and why it does that sort of rocket thing that you said is that it grabs image, right? It grabs specific images and allows us to feel and see and experience those moments that, you know, that whatever that is. And so that makes these larger issues more personal, something that we can relate to. So I think that might be another part of what would be, you know, something Blue was bringing up.
Yes. And you know what, Kimberly, I would like to take us to your world of poetry. There is one specific poem that I think really takes us into this time period and what we're thinking about, especially thinking about healing. And if you can please jump into the poem, Ikwe Nimi, Dancing Resistance.
Absolutely. Ikwe Nimi, Dancing Resistance. 365 jingles in rows upon my dress, turned by the hands of one who deserted, escaped a mandated pipestone education. 266 miles looking backwards for pursuit, hiding from promised punishments by day, migrating like Hmong relatives by moonlight. 365 ribbons hold the jingles to my dress, colorful strips cut, tied, and threaded, stitched by the laughing women of my childhood, women who earned $2.25 for pea-stitching geese aprons, pot holders, whose stiff fingers tapped drumbeats to sew by. 365 prayers swing and tap, one against another, Zangwe Gwe Makode, ancient medicine dress, silver-coned legacy, sounding the cleansing voice of rain. 145th White Earth Nation celebration powwow, the weight of Anishinaabe history on my back, a dress made light by resistance, this healing and art.
Wow, I appreciate that one. And you just heard some of her work. I know you want to talk to her. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Now, Kimberly, tell us the other beautiful story that's connected to this poem.
Well, I think most people might know that, you know, it's referring to the jingle dress dance, and the origin of the dress is said to come about 100 years ago during a Spanish flu epidemic, and it was a dream-born dress. The vision came to a father whose daughter was ill. Women created the dress. He had dreamed and then in ceremony danced for the young girl who then began to revive, grow stronger, and before long was able to join them in the dance. And so we often refer to it as a medicine dress, the dance as a healing dance. And the jingle dresses, also, of course, you know, one of the women's regalia worn for powwows and social dances, but it's retained this other meaning. So the dance is often used for more solemn occasions, sometimes asking for a kind of healing, sometimes dancing in protest. So it's both the physical and spiritual, the spirit and the flesh that we're wanting to heal. And sometimes society may need healing from maladies like racism. So last year during the pandemic, we actually had a group of women in the United States and First Nations women who were dancing every Saturday at a set time. We would put on our regalia and we would dance where we were. And we would share, you know, so we were dancing for healing during the pandemic. And we would share photos and we'd, you know, connect by phone and we'd put things on Facebook, et cetera. And then after the killing of George Floyd, we again came together wearing the jingle dress, and this time there had been a group of people in Milwaukee who painted a memorial to George Floyd and to other young men who had been killed, including Dontre Hamilton, who was from Milwaukee. And so we, you know, came out in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, a handful of jingle dress dancers, hand drummers, singers, members of the Native community, and we danced in honor of George Floyd, in solidarity, and also for healing. So I feel like all of those rituals and symbols that are attached to the dress continue. And it's one of the ways that Indigenous traditions, you know, cuts across generations and still informs what we do today.
It certainly does. And just seeing how you've reflected the power of this dress, this gift of the dance, it really, you know, just brings us to that point where when we turn to poetry, sometimes we get deeper into an issue that an entire book can get you. It's interesting. Where do you stand on this? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And let's go ahead and go to another voice joining us today out of Gallup, New Mexico. We have Monty on the line, tuned in on KGLP. Monty, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Well, it's going to be hard. I'm moved. I'm very moved. I love poetry of all kinds, and I don't know anything about Kimberly. I did live in Wisconsin for a time, but I don't know about her work as the poet laureate of Wisconsin. But I have been a big fan of Joy Harjo, who is well known for her poetry and has beautifully shared her work all across the world. And just listening to the first poem you read was so meaningful, because you mentioned the Hmong people, and they're halfway around the world, but they are linked to what we're trying to do and what you're trying to do. And I thank you, and I'm very, very happy to be a part of this. Thank you very much, Kimberly.
Monty, thank you for giving us a ring, and I'm glad you have been introduced to her work. Kimberly, anything you want to tell Monty?
Well, miigwech for calling. Thank you so much for calling. But also, you know, a couple of things come to mind. One of them is, of course, to celebrate Joy Harjo, who has, you know, been reappointed to another term as U.S. Poet Laureate and has been doing such amazing work on all our behalves. And she talks about poetry as a healing, right? That poetry is an act of healing. But also, when you talk about the connections to people across the world, that is one of the things that I also try to be aware of, is the way that, you know, the problems of of consumerism, colonialism, all of those isms and ings, impact a lot of people in similar ways. And there are a couple of poems in this book, actually, that come from my experience in the Kingdom of Bahrain. And also there's one poem in particular that takes language from what happened in the Arab Spring in Bahrain and what happened at Standing Rock, and then takes language from a writer in Bahrain and someone who was a spokesperson for Standing Rock, and it is so incredibly parallel that we see how we are connected in our oppression and in our fights for justice.
Well, thank you for that. And again, Monty, thank you for your call. We're going to take another one. Again, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is a number, and we have 10 copies to share with listeners who make it on air today. Let's say hello to Hazel, who is in Hayward, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Hazel, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're connected to Kim.
Hi. I loved your words about Nebeh water, and it makes me think, I'm almost 77 now, and just what a place, the lake that I went swimming in almost every day in the summer, means to me, like revisiting it, how it's almost like a ceremony or a healing each time I re-enter that lake. But then also Lake Superior, which I try to be at least once a year, you know, very different presence of Lake Superior. And then before I die, I'm really hoping to see the ocean again, where I feel connected to the world, to all life from all time. And then also just the healing that you were talking about with the jingle dress dancing, how helpful it is to have some way to express the sorrow and the need for healing for all peoples who are suffering. Thank you so much.
Hazel, thank you for your call. And Kimberly, you know what? Take us back to your work. And this work that Kimberly is sharing today is out of her book, Copper Yearning, which we're featuring as our April Book of the Month. Kim, go ahead, take it away.
All right. Well, I first want to say miigwech to Hazel and for connecting that whole idea of, because a good part of this book is associated with the idea of, as I said, a cosmology of Nebe, and many of the poems are about water because I'm from this, you know, watery existence up in northwestern Minnesota. And so one of the early poems is Wellspring, Word from Water, which just says we speak words from ancient water. We think about all the stories we have about, you know, our origins in water. And I'd be happy to, like, you know, read one of those poems if you want, Tara, or should I just talk a little more about that?
No, let's go ahead and give them the poetry.
Okay, so I'm going to do a shorter one. There's a long one that I think about water that is kind of fun to do with the audience when we can all participate. But this one is the one I mentioned. It's just called Wellspring, Words from Water. A white earth childhood, water rich and money poor. Vaporous beings transformed in cycles. The alluvial stories pulled from Minnesota's lakes. Harvested like whitefish, like monomin, like old prophecies of seed growing on water. Legends of Anishinaabe spirit beings, cloud-bearer thunderbird who brings us rain, winter wendigo like ice woman, or Mishubishu who roars with spit and hiss of rapids, great underwater panther, you copper us to these tributaries of balance, rills, a cosmology of Nebe. We believe our bodies thirst, our earth, one element, Anabishabu, tea brown wealth, like maple sap, amber, the liquid eye of moon. Now she turns tide, and each wetted being gyrates to the sound, her river body curving. We, women of ageless waters, endure, like each flower drinks from night, holds dew. Our bodies, a libretto, saturated, an aquifer. We speak words from ancient waters.
Thank you for
that, Kim.
So
many of our stories, yeah. I was just going to say, so many of our stories are bound up in water, and we understand water as, you know, one of my more recent poems talks about, you know, the scientists say my brain and heart are 73% water. They underestimate me, you know, because we're more water than that, I believe.
And Kim, you also incorporate the language in there. And I'm wondering how many people out there, she was saying the word for water in her language, you were thinking of your own way of how you say water and even the story that goes along with that word, what it really means. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of the language. And then seeing it alongside this beautiful poem or woven into it. There's another layer to getting straight to the emotion, getting straight to the point, and you know, that is one of the beauties of our language. And Kim, anything you want to share about when you do add those words, what you feel happens?
So I think it does, as you suggest, Tara, it invites us to have a more layered experience, but also it calls up, as the language does. I mean, poetry is much about, is as much song as it is print, right? So the sound of the language, I feel, is significant for us to hear and to preserve. But also, I believe that, you know, Indigenous languages are musical of their own accord. And so I love to have a multivocal poem where I'm doing this sort of code switching of going back and forth between languages and maybe going back and forth between perspectives.
And Ojibwe language or Anishinaabe Mo'in, there's some fun stuff in there too. And Kimberly, also thinking about creating poems, do you ever write near the water, on the water? Tell me about that.
So I have a little, I spend a lot of time, we have a water access cabin up adjacent to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, which is 1 million acres of lakes and islands in northeastern Minnesota. So we spend a significant amount of time there every year. And I spend a significant amount of that time in a kayak out. And I have in my kayak some waterproof things I can write with. You know, there's a little books that are you can write in that are waterproof. And I spend a lot of time out. And so much of my inspiration comes actually from being in the natural world and the place among our many relatives. Last fall, I was out. We got to stay because of the pandemic. We were sheltering there, so we stayed into the fall. And I was out freezing one day because it had now turned very, very cold, and I'm in a kayak. And I decided, oh, I have to go back an hour early because I can't take the cold. And I started to head back, and first an eagle flew over, and so I'm looking up at Migazi, and then I look back, and I see something in the water and something swimming, and I'm like, oh, I didn't see that before. First, I thought it was a log. I'm like, oh, I didn't notice that, because you always have to watch about what you're going to hit. And in fact, it was a black bear swimming across the water. So it's just, you know, what are you going to encounter? Who are you going to encounter? And those kind of sort of moments that are so transforming are certainly a part of what gets into my poetry.
How exciting. And we're going to pause on that for a moment. And I know you want to talk to Kim, so go ahead, dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And the poetry that you're hearing today, is it bringing you back to some places you love or places, piquing your interest on places you'd like to explore? Join us, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is a number.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
We hope you are joining our Poetry Spotlight today. I'm Tara Gatewood, and it is your chance to let the world know how important poetry is to your circle. Dial in and tell Kimberly Blazer, our featured poet, and I all about it. And of course, if you'd like to comment on the work she's sharing today, go ahead and give us a ring. Our phone lines are open. The number to reach us is 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we have several books to share with you. There's plenty left. Dial in now, 1-800-996-2848. We're giving those away to people who share their comments and questions on air. And Kimberly, you know what? Since we have this opportunity, would you like to read another poem?
Sure. Maybe I would go to something that is a little different. I volunteer at the Racine Correctional Institute, and I haven't seen UC people for a while, but there's a group of men who have a poetry group there, and they are really quite amazing, their own work, and they have their poetry will blow your mind, their performances, and they also have a sense of humor. The title of the group is called Pros and Cons. But the first time I went there, I found out it wasn't as easy to get into the facility for an outsider, and I ended up having to, you know, leave many things behind, take many things off, and finally change clothes with the librarian in order to get through the scanners. So that's sort of the backstory of this, but also it reminded me of, you know, when I first began visiting, it's, you know, spilled into my mind all those things about laws and incarceration in this country and sort of the unequal application of justice, which I think we're looking at fairly straightforwardly in today's news and events, and the way that my family sort of fell on both sides of the law. I mean, we have lawyers and judges in our family. We have the jailed and the imprisoned. And so I just thought a lot about what it was like to grow up on a reservation when things were, you know, challenging in that way. And so this poem is called When We Sing of Might. In this part, I switch clothes with a woman I just met, shed my phone, my metal, pray to the scanner gods. I walk freely through each lock, each clanging door, hear the prison air, the elastic waist of her patterned skirt settle like a new identity around my body. Two, this is the part where it used to be game, a child moving like a worm through the blades of cool, through soft evening grass. Firecrackers are only sin. From here, I watch the patrol car, count to 10, to 20, count the pointed edges of a star driving by, remember the chorus about sin and error pining, hold my breath, spend an old longing born of beer, born of Bible talk and men. Three, this is the year when no one followed the tin star or the wonder star of Christmas hymns, when the trail between the courthouse and my grandma's grew shorter and everybody's hands got tired picking the rice clean enough for baby Jesus, clean enough to sell at the model meat market on Main Street, where all the cars parked on an angle. And I used to think the sign said, angel parking, and I wondered who would park an angel if they could find one. For right here, weary world, I park the flashbacks about all the arrestable moments, a past of illegal brown bodies eating out of season, boys the wrong color for love, a past of too many fish fists and bottles broken, the brown drip of spilled brandy, arrestable edges of lives made jagged and dangerous. His love, and his gospel is peace, star jagged and dangerous, as the moments where I see, and maybe you do too, the faces sharpened into angles of rage, of disgust, sharpened on all the low-wage jobs and lying songs our children learned in grade school and sang at concerts with finger play and warm Kool-Aid, when we all still drank the Kool-Aid and believed the Liberty lyrics. And in his name, all oppression shall cease. This is the part where arrestable moments could go either way and do, depending upon the time of night, the county, and the star-wearing body. So that quiet grass and breath-holding was training. That counting, 1 to 10, 10 to 20, this is where seconds can become years for some when it goes the wrong way, when they are the wrong color, when their pockets are empty, when liberty and justice for all is all used up. Five, but when we sing of might, this is the part. The part where my jailed brown uncles, my shackled cousins, angel their way in, where children fostered and lost reappear. I dress in their stories, patterned and purple as night. I dress in old songs of prison trains and men covering their eyes to sleep. Songs of women on one side of a sliding panel of lives shattered but mosaicked by might, the angles of survival, a many-cornered wholeness.
And you just heard another one from Kimberly Blaser from her book, Copper Yearning, which we're featuring today. Kimberly, thank you for that story. And there are some really exciting moments that you take us to in this poem. And I know folks want to talk directly with you too, so let's get back to the phone lines. Let's go ahead and say hello to Melvin, who is in Eagle Butte, South Dakota, tuned in on KIPI. Melvin, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You are connected to Kim.
Hey, how's it going? I'm actually a DJ at KIPI, and I just got off my shift. But
hey, thanks for calling.
It's crazy you guys are talking about poems because I do poetry. My grandpa does poetry, and I read a couple of poems on the air just this morning, you know.
Well, I'm glad you did that. And what did you share?
You want me to read the poem I shared?
Tell us a little bit about it. If it's short, go for it.
Yeah, I'll just read it. It's titled Living, but it goes, what does the word living mean to you? Do you view it as a noun or see it as a verb? Are you content with walking on ground or does your spirit fly high like a bird? Do you live your life or do you love your life? Are you the sharpening stone or are you the sharpened knife? When your skies get dark and the storms of life get frightening, are you the sound of thunder or the sight of lightning? Do you wonder what it looks like atop the mountain or are you discouraged by the fog? Tell me, is it the size of the dog in the fight or is it the size of the fight in the dog? So when life gets bronky and bucks you off, do you unsaddle and turn them out or do you crawl back in the middle and show them what being cowboy is all about? Now when traveling in a car, are your eyes and phones stuck like glue? Or do you look out the window and enjoy the beautiful view? Now answer my question, if you will. When I say the word living, how does it make you feel? That's it.
Very nice. Radio family, glad you called in, Melvin. Anything you want to tell Kim, too, before we let you go?
I guess thank you for talking about poems, because I like to do it, too. My grandpa is a pretty well-known poet, Blaine Norville. He has some books published, but I just figured I'd call in since I was at the radio station, just got done DJing, you know.
Very nice. Well, safe travels, Melvin. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Kim, anything you want to tell Melvin? Oh, boy. Let's see if we can get her back. But Melvin, thank you for giving us a ring there in Eagle Butte, South Dakota. And let's go now to Kotzebue. We have on the line Yayuk from KOTZ Listening Community there in Alaska. Yayuk, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call. I woke up this morning. We had a male snow. It's like a male rain in the southwest. And then it turned into sleet. And then it started raining. Now we have a female snow, real light snow. I want to I was listening to Kimberly's poems, and I listen every day to that, and I hardly ever call. Once in a while, I'll call when I hear something that I'd like to hear. But
sure.
When you wake up in the morning.
Yayuk, just hearing what you explained with the snow and paying attention to those kind of details that maybe you look out your window and you see it and then you move on. But when you take that moment to really think, what is this I'm seeing? What is this we're being blessed with? Especially the snow. And then you think of it more, you know, than maybe what others do. You know, you think of it more. You get deeper into maybe even what it means to you, maybe even what it means to your culture, or reminding you of another time. And I think that's really exciting when we let our environment influence us too. And Yayuk, is there anything else you want to share? Go ahead.
One thing I think about too is when I lived in Point Lee, Alaska for a while, where, you know, you walk out the door, I just walk out, and my older brother, Jack, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm walking out my door. You know, I'm walking out of his house in Port Lake. He said, you got to look around for polar bears.
Yeah, you got to be on your toes. Well, thank you for giving us a ring. We got another caller. We're going to go to, I believe you say, Polony, who is in Fort Yates, North Dakota. Thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air. And how do you say your name?
You pronounce Polony. It's three syllables. Kutepi, it means Pawnee shot at him in Lakota. But okay. I just wanted to call in and share this quick sonnet, if you will, poem, either or. And it goes like, it's only 12 words, and it goes, pray for those who export our people for the benefit of one. Thank you, and have a good day. Bye.
You too. Thanks for giving us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is how you reach us. And it looks like we got Kim back. I don't know, Kim, if there was some of the poetry that you heard on the air today from our callers you'd like to comment on, or... just reflecting on what you heard so far. Go ahead.
So I didn't really get to hear the poetry, unfortunately, but I did want to say that, you know, those poets should connect with us at INAPO, Indigenous Nations Poets, because one of our missions is to support emerging writers. So we'd love to hear from you. You can find us online. We're building a website. We have a website where there'll be more coming out. So just keep your eyes open for connecting with us, and we'll offer you some programming.
Nice. And you know what? While we're talking about it, any more details on forming this and how far you hope it'll go?
Well, it's a national organization. We're modeled on things like Cave Canem and Kundiman, and we miraculously got off the ground last year during the pandemic. We were able to get some small grants. We participated in several programs. We have, if you go to Tippett Rise or Adrian Brinkerhoff Poetry Foundation, you can find we had a video program. So we've done a lot of things already. We have a call out right now for youth poets who are 16 to 21 to submit 2 to 4 minute poetry videos on environmental justice. And you can find more details about that also at INAPO. So if you just Google it, you could find us and could see some of that information. But we're going to have a first retreat for emerging writers in Washington, D.C. next April. And then Joy Harjo's going to be there helping us. And so it's an amazing moment, I think, for Native writers in general. But I'm really excited about getting this organization off the ground and available to support poets.
Well, I'm glad you told us about it. And do want to remind folks that if you miss anything in the hour, you can always find this program in our archives at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And Kimberly, we got to wrap things up here. Is there anything you want to leave us with? Any thoughts? About a minute.
I'll leave you with a poem that is for those people who have lost. We're living in this time of loss, and those people who have lost someone this year. Afterwards, because the smallness of our being is our only greatness, because one night I was in a room listening until only one heart beat, because in these last years I've worn and worn and nearly worn out my black funeral shoes, because the gesture of afterwards means the same thing no matter who speaks them, because faith, belief, forever are only words, no matter, because matter disappears always and eventually, because action is not matter, but energy that's spent changes being. And if death too is a change of being, perhaps action counts. And if death is a land of unknowing, perhaps we do well to live with uncertainty. And if death is a forested land, it would be good to learn trees. And if death is a kingdom, it would be good to practice service. And if death is a foreign state, we should loosen allegiance to this one. And if our soul leaves our body, then we must rehearse goodbye.
Kimberly Blazer, thank you for sharing today our April Book of the Month poet. Also, thank you to Holy Cow Press for providing copies of her book to our listeners today. And we got to wrap things up, but we're inviting you back tomorrow, where we'll preview the work of Arrogant Star, including her character, Super Indian. Thanks again, and we wish you the best. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, proud to provide traditional and contemporary American Indian craft supplies, from feathers, furs, and hides to conchos, fringe, shells, and beads, all available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Buju, Zanaga de Sabikeshi anapinewin, Gedaayan Gego Jidabaigesiwan, Nananda Wiaguyen, Gawin, Genajikea Yasin. Gnoje no kid and a shinabe akuzi wigamigung no waj jigikendaman, mawadishuane healthcare.gov, gema gnoj 1-800-318-2596. Gound in Agadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.